Hello?
Hello.
Hi, it's Marianne. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Good. I didn't know you had so many times that you do this, because I was just reading your email.
Okay.
Yeah, for quite a few times. Almost every day except for Friday, huh?
Every day except for Friday. That's correct.
Wow, that's a lot. And twice, actually.
Correct. I do two classes a day except for Friday.
Oh, wow. That's a lot. So is this the biggest class on Sundays?
The one at 10:30 is the bigger one.
Oh, I'm usually gone in the morning, so.
I understand. But then everything gets recorded, so if you want, you can listen to everything.
Yeah, but I like to be with live, you know what I mean, with real people. I know I could listen to it, but, you know, not the same.
No, I know. Welcome. I believe somebody else just joined us. Hold on a second. Well, we can begin now. I usually wait till at least two people have joined us. So please join me in saying the Anabakoa. And before I start, I'll again explain that next week we'll explain more about the Anabakoa and give it to you as a tool. But I always start our classes with the Anabakoach, because we want to bring the energy of creation into our space. And we also say a verse from the Zohar. So please join me in saying the Anabakoach. Anabakoach, Gedulat Yemincha, Alephet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadi. These six letters have a gematria of 506, which is the same gematria as the phrase Ahavati Nam, unconditional love. Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagbenu Taharenu Dobra. Kufrei Shayan, Sintet Nun. These six letters spell two Hebrew words, Kra, Satan. Kra means to tear up, and Satan is the name of the negative force that gives us free will. The same six letters can be permutated, they can be rearranged to spell two other Hebrew words, Sha'ar, Katan, meaning small gates. And this represents the gates in our body, the eyes, the ears, the nose, and the mouth, because this is the entrance point for our negative system. And by guarding these gates, we are protecting ourselves from the negative system.
Paula Richards.
Na gibor dor she'yichud cha. Nun gimel dalet yud kaf shin. The first three letters, nun gimel dalet, have a gematria of 57, which is the same as the Hebrew word zan, which translates as parnasa, sustenance. Yud kaf shin is a healing sequence that allows us to take any part of our body back to its stems that needs healing, back to its stem cell state, where it can be cleansed, where it can be healed, where it can be rejuvenated, and then returning it to the body where it will again do its job as it was created to do. perfectly. The letters of the month of Cheshvan, the Dalet that created the planet Ma'adim, the planet Mars, and the Nun that created the constellation Akrav, the Scorpio. Together, the Dalet and the Nun spell the Hebrew word Din, which means judgment. And the month of Cheshvan is a month of judgment. But if you utilize the tool of binding by striking, it's not something that you need to be concerned with. Using the tool of binding by striking allows us to change the name of the month, which the sages have called Mar, bitter Cheshvan, to Ram, elevated Cheshvan. Barchem tacharem rachamei sitkacha tamidam vayim. Tetet resh, saditav gimel. Chasin kadosh v'rov tucha na'el adatecha. Het kufet, tet nunayin. Yachid ge'e ramcha p'nei zokre kedushatecha. Yud gimel lamed, hey zayin kuf. Shavatenu kabel ushma tziyakatenu yodea ta'alumo shin kufav sadiyud taf. The first two letters of this seventh verse is kuf, shin and kuf, and it has a gematria of 400, which represents the four worlds times 10 sephirot within 10 sephirot. 400 is a number that relates to completion and perfection. The last four letters of this verse connect, teach us that they have the gematria 506, the same as the first verse, and they teach us that our path to completion and ultimately our path to perfection is through the injection of unconditional love in every step in our process. And the eighth verse of the Anabakoah, we say in a whisper, but I will say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. Baruch Chen Kivod Malchuto Leolam Vayet. I'm getting a bit of static, so I do ask everyone to mute their phones by pressing *6. This will allow you to, if you want to ask a question during the class, to be able to unmute your phone by pressing *6 again. And this usually stops the static. Thank you very much. I'm now going to read a verse from the Zohar. Reading from the Parasha of Noach, which we read yesterday, last Shabbat. I'm reading from section 38, titled, "And Noach, a man of earth, began and planted a vineyard." I'm reading verse number 310. And I'll start with a L'shem Yichud. L'shem Yichud kudsha barichu ishkinte bidchilu urchimu udchilu udchilu urchimu. Liakta Hashem Yudhei Bavavhe, Biyechuda Shalim B'Shem Kol Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, La Sok Torah Mitzvah, Vayehi Noam Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Maasei Adenu Konunei Aleinu Maasei Adenu Konuneihu. Vekein Kegavna Ada Vayesht Min Hayayin, Vayishkar, Vayitkal, V'al-da-it-ar. Kam-avi-kenan. Kim-ad-it-mar. V'it-yehiv. Atar-lech-lich-na-an. V'shal-ta-a. U'may-da-hawa. Kadem-tadik. Pirazadivrit Sarso Vihan Yadia Avar Mineyahukiuma. We find the same meaning in the words, and he drank of the wine and was drunk, and he was uncovered. This aroused Ham, the father of Hanan, because of whom the point of judgment, which is the secret of nakedness of his father, became uncovered. And we have learned that Canaan was given a place to rule, and who castrated Noah, thereby removing the secret of the covenant, which had made him a righteous man. As we have learned that he removed the covenant, the male organ, from him, meaning that he removed the mohin of begetting, which is given only by the power of the Holy Covenant. The removal is considered castration. Are there any questions? In order to ask questions, if you've muted your phone, you'll have to press star 6. Now, a quick review of last week's class. Essentially, we learned that the physical world is illusionary, which means it will change, which means that we don't perceive it properly. And we had some examples of how we make mistakes because we don't perceive the things in the physical world clearly and completely. Please hold on 1 second. So that's a very brief discussion of an hour class. But at the last of that class, we left a dot test to give you an idea to try and expand or understand the way to solve the dot test. And this week, just to explain it briefly, if you take the first line, which will be to connect as an example only, the bottom row of the would connect the three dots of the bottom row, but continue to draw the line out equivalent to the distance between the dots, and then on the right-hand column of the dots, take your pen and take it up through the middle dot of the right-hand column and the middle dot of the top row, and then further out so that you now are above the left column. That's your second line. The third line comes down through the three dots of the left column, and that leaves you just two dots to complete, and that's a diagonal that takes you from the lower left corner to the upper right corner through the middle of the nine dots, and therefore you've connected all nine dots with four straight lines. The purpose of this is to teach something very simple. In order to perceive things properly and completely, we need to go outside of the box that we create for ourselves. Because nobody said to you that those nine dots are a box. But our minds perceive them as a box, and so most people never went outside of the lines, never went outside the box. But in order to perceive properly, you have to go outside of the box, not just once, but twice. Does anybody have any questions? So today's class is we can begin at the beginning, which is not the beginning of the Torah. The word Bereshit in the Torah, which means or is translated usually as in the beginning, but there are a number of ways to understand that word Bereshit. But one of the ways is to translate it, if it's pronounced Bereshit, then it does mean in the beginning. But the way the Torah is pronounced, it's Bereshit, which means in a beginning. And so we learn that the Torah doesn't begin at the beginning. We need to go back to a place where there is a creator. And we can't really know much about the creator because we can't name the creator other than to say he's the creator. But what does that mean? The name doesn't really tell us a lot about what the entity called the creator is. And if I call him God, I can tell you, and you all know, that the God that you perceive and the God that I perceive are two different types, two different essences, two different perceptions. So we have this universe, but even more than one universe, we have all universes. And it's all one creator. And everything in all the universes is one connected creator. But the creator has a thought. And that thought is to be revealed. But who is the creator going to be revealed to? So the creator has to create creatures. And so he decides to do that with something called an extension. An extension of the creator is not the creator. An extension of the creator is something like the creator, but not completely the creator. And that, according to our sages, is all that we can say about the creator. But the extension of the creator, we can say a little more. And the sages have said, the Kabbalists have said, the extension of the creator is called light. And why is it called light? And they give us a metaphor. If you take a candle, and they disregard the fact that the wick burns up, or that the wax melts. A candle, when lit, is light. And I can take that candle and light another candle. I haven't diminished the first candle at all, the first light at all. Now I have two candles, double what I had before in light. And now I can expand that. Light two more candles. And then those four can light four more. And those eight can light eight more. And the 16 can light 32. and the 32 to 64, and ad infinitum. There is never a limitation with respect to the light. The light, being an extension of the Creator, will continue to expand, will continue to share, because that's the essence of light, sharing. But who is this extension? Who is this light going to share with? And the light, wanting to implement the plan of creation, creates a vessel. And so the vessel which receives and the light which shares complement each other. The vessel receives what the light has to share. The vessel wants what the light has to share because it was created to want what the light has to share. This world, this universe, is called Ein Sof by the Kabbalists. Endless. Without end is the literal translation of the phrase Ein Sof. Without end. Because the vessel expands to receive more light. The light expands the vessel to share more light. And this world is in balance because the light is sharing and the vessel is receiving and everything is absolutely wonderful. The vessel has no lack because before it has a desire, that desire is fulfilled by the light. Because the light created the vessel, it understands and knows what the vessel will desire. But we have to understand something that is very, it's a paradox. It's difficult to understand. In fact, the sages have told us it's impossible to understand it. And they use the phrase that comes from our prayers. He and his name are one. He is the light. His name is the vessel. And they're in unity. Now, I describe to you that unity, but in spirituality, when there isn't a body, what is an essence of something, like the light being sharing and the vessel being receiving, those essences are never in unity. They're the opposites of each other. They cannot be in unity spiritually. In the physical world, the world we're used to, we can take opposites. We can take a stick and put one end in a bucket of ice and another end set on fire. Those are opposites. We all understand they're opposites. But the stick is now unified with those opposites. We can understand that. But in spirituality, that's false. There is no way to bring two spiritual opposites together. And yet in the endless world, in the Ein Sof, they were these two opposites, sharing and receiving, were brought together in unity. We don't understand how that works. We don't understand how that's possible. And that is a paradox that we is the father of all paradoxes. Any paradox in your life or in my life starts with that paradox in the Ein Sof. So the sages have said, here's the endless world. It's in unity. Accept that. Don't try and understand that, because you're wasting your time, and it's not going to matter to you in this physical world. Now, human beings being curious, there's all kinds of projections of people trying to understand it throughout the centuries. But the sages have said, all of that, it's impossible to understand because it's a paradox. We cannot, while we're in physical bodies, understand this paradox. And yet, there's a great secret in that statement. The secret is, while I'm in the physical body, I cannot understand the endless world. But when I let go of the physical body, I can. What does that teach us? It teaches us that we, human beings, are a spiritual entity put into a physical body. How did that happen? Why did it happen is the subject of this class. But I want you to know that the subject of this class is a lifetime study. In an hour's class, I cannot do justice to this subject. I can just touch on it. The question is, what is the purpose of the soul being connected to the body? The sages have said the purpose is so that we will control the desire to receive. Let's understand. Remember, the endless world consists of a vessel. The vessel has a consciousness to receive. The vessel was created to receive what the light had to share. After eons of non-time, because there is no time in the endless world. There's no need for time. You want something, you receive it. It's unification. It's unified. After endless eons of time that don't exist, the vessel is starting to feel something called bread of shame. Just look at the words. Bread, meaning something you eat, something that fulfills you, of shame. Shame, what a shame. I didn't earn it. The metaphor that the Kabbalists have given us is a simple story. If I take someone to dinner, we have a wonderful meal. We have a wonderful conversation. We have absolute great environment for all of this. And we arise from the meal fully satisfied. And I go and I pay for the meal. You say, as my guest, you thank me and we move on. But what if I do that night after night after night, for a week, for a month, for a year, for 10 years, for lifetimes? What happens? My guest says, time out. You know, I'm not earning this. I'm enjoying it, but I haven't earned it. I haven't shared with you. Let me buy the meal once in a while. This is the feeling, the illusionary feeling, of bread of shame. The more that you consume, the more that you eat, the worse you feel. Bread of shame. If I don't earn the light, if I don't earn the fulfillment, I don't want the fulfillment. But let's understand this paradox. If I don't want the fulfillment, and I say to the light, no more, I'm not going to go out to dinner with you anymore. Isn't that a desire? And the light is there to fulfill any desire. So how do you fulfill a desire that says, I don't want the desire, I don't want the fulfillment? That's another form of paradox, isn't it? The result of this feeling of bread of shame is a contract, an agreement between the light and the vessel. The vessel says, I want to share back to you, light. And the light says, I don't need anything. I don't want anything. I only want to share. Here's the paradox. How do we resolve this? So the light comes up with an idea, and it goes to the vessel and says, here's the idea. I'm going to create a world that is an illusion. Just like your feeling of bread of shame is an illusion. And in this illusion, you will see yourself, the one vessel, separated into billions of billions of people. And in this illusion, you will be able to share with each other. And in this illusion, you will be able to earn the fulfillment. And the way you earn the fulfillment is to share with others. Because you ask to share, I want you to share, let's go into this physical world, and you learn to share. Now, that is why this physical world was created. That is why we are living, our souls, are living in bodies. But these physical bodies are very restraining for the soul. It's very uncomfortable for the soul. So every night, the soul needs to go to sleep to escape the body. The soul doesn't sleep. The body doesn't sleep. But they're allowed to separate. This world is an agreement between the light and the vessel in the endless world. Now, it didn't just happen that it went from the endless world, which is infinite energy, infinite light, down to the physical world, because the light is too much energy for physicality. It has to be transformed step by step to a lower level. Just like the power station in our electrical grid that humanity has revealed, that power station would burn up a house if it went directly into the 110 gadgets that we plug into the 110 receptacles in our walls, in our homes. Step by step, the power station transforms the energy to a lower level. And that is done in a process of four steps. Also part of this agreement is that there will be 7,000-year periods. And we will explain why in another class. But essentially, There are 10 sephirot. But the top three, the upper three, are not in this physical world, because if they were, we wouldn't be able to perceive the illusion. We would be able to see through the illusion. And that is not earning the light, not earning the fulfillment. So this world is created with seven sephirot. That's why we have seven continents. It's why we have seven seas. That's why we have seven colors in our rainbow. That's why we have seven notes in music. That's why we have 7 days in a week. That's why creation is described in the Torah, is pursued in seven times. All of this is part of the agreement that once I explain the agreement to you, partially I have done so, you all are going to say, why did we do that? We had everything we needed in the endless world. Why are we in this world of pain and suffering? And the answer is to remove bread of shame. We will return to the endless world. We will return to that serene world, but not until we have learned, we have corrected control of the body. Not till we have removed bread of shame from ourselves. And how do we remove bread of shame? By sharing. Now we have 7,000 years, and we're in the year 5777. The last 1,000 years is referred to as Shabbat. It's referred to as Mashiach consciousness. It's referred to as the time in this process where we will not have pain and suffering. But we still will need to learn certain things. But before that 7,000, that last 1,000 years, within the first 6,000 years, we have to have learned certain things. And what is that? Well, remember, when we were created, Adam was us. Every one of us. Every human being was Adam, was within Adam, was part of Adam, was part of Adam's soul. And so we participated in this sin of Adam. Was it truly a sin? Did Adam have free choice? This is an argument that we're not going to resolve today. It's referred to as a machloket. An argument for the sake of truth, searching for truth. We're not going to resolve this today. But we can understand that we were all part of Adam, and we all participated in the sin. And when Adam did eat, the metaphor is eating. The metaphor is injecting something into yourself. What did we inject? What did Adam, meaning us, inject into ourselves? Now, we were created, the vessel, as a desire to receive. Adam was created as a desire to receive. And then we, as Adam, injected a consciousness of selfishness into ourselves. And so we fell spiritually. It wasn't that we would just share. Now we have this attitude that I'm important. that my ego that separates me from God, as we learned last week, my ego is going to cause me to try and control all of these other people that I'm really here to learn to share with. So my innate human desire is to control, and the learning is how to share instead of control. And we have to understand, what is the difference between controlling and sharing? And we have two words in English. A gift. I give something to someone. What is that? I give something to someone has an agenda attached to it. My grandparents gave me as a grandson, as a little child, they would give me a gift. I give my grandchildren a little gift. What am I doing? I have an expectation. I want my grandchildren to tell me thank you. I give them something with an agenda that they will appreciate it. In other ways, in our work with an employer, I work at the employer with an agenda. I'm not sharing my labor with him. I have an agenda to be paid. Giving is not sharing. It's an agenda, a personal agenda. I want for myself alone. The Kabbalist and Rabbi Ashlag calls that the desire to receive for oneself alone. How do I earn the light? By transforming that desire to receive for oneself alone into the desire to receive in order to share. Sharing is doing something with no agenda, with no expectation of receiving back. Let me give you an example of sharing, true and ultimate sharing. Someone dies. You don't know that someone. You find their body on the street. And you say, I'm going to bury this body right here where I find it. I'm going to dig that grave. Can you expect anything back from a dead body? Of course not. So when you dig that grave, you are sharing with that body with no personal agenda, no expectation to receive anything back. You have a desire to share without receiving anything in return. That is what we are in this world to learn. Each and every one of us has a tikkun, a correction to achieve. What is the correction for me is not the correction for you. I have a personal tikkun, a personal reason for being here. I have a personal reason for being created, just like you have a personal reason to be created. Now, lifetime after lifetime, we've made mistakes. We started with Adam's mistake and Chava's mistake. But as we have gone through lifetime after lifetime, we have veiled our soul. We have made it more difficult to achieve our tikkun, our corrections. But ultimately, we have one thing to do in this world, in this lifetime. but we don't know what it is. The Kabbalists have given us tools to find out what it is. And starting next week, I will give you tools, one tool a week for the next 17, 18 weeks. I will give you tools to help you understand what it is, to help you find what your purpose in this life is. If I told you what your purpose is, and the Kabbalists are able to tell us that, you don't earn the light. You don't earn the revelation. You don't remove bread of shame. You veil yourself again. So it's not like we don't know, but we can't tell you. But we can give you the tools to find out yourself, and we can help guide you to find out yourself. And that's what these classes are designed. And I promise you, at the end of the 20 weeks, if you learn all of the tools, you will be able to create a life of serenity in this physical world. Unfortunately, it won't happen in 20 weeks because human beings don't learn, don't remember that quickly. We have to review over and over. We have to be slapped on the hands over and over. When the little toddler reaches out for the hot stove, Mommy or Daddy will slap the hand. You think they're going to reach out again? The answer is yes. But if they touch the hot stove, they'd never touch it again, because that kind of pain is severe. But Hashem loves us. Hashem is never going to let us touch the hot stove. But He is going to ask us to earn the removal of bread of shame, to earn what we receive in this physical world. Now, we receive His light all the time. We couldn't be alive without it. But we don't realize it. That's part of the illusion. We don't see how it happens. But we can remove that illusion and see the truth through the tools that the Kabbalah gives us. So we are in this physical world for one purpose: to share, to learn to share. Learning to give is a beginning part of the process. But it doesn't remove bread of shame when you give with an agenda. Only when you share without an agenda do you remove bread of shame. We have 7,000 years and we're down to 223. Now, how do I arrive at that? Because the last 1,000 is Mashiach. So we have up to 6,000 years to remove bread of shame consciously. If we don't succeed by that time, by the 6,000th year, we will have the prophecy of the Armageddon War happen. God forbid. But there are two paths to Mashiach, to the serenity, to learning how to remove bread of shame. Those two paths are called the path of pain and suffering and chaos, leading ultimately to the Armageddon War, God forbid, or the path of Torah, the bath of conscious exchange, where we learn to share without bread of shame. We remove the bread of shame consciously on our own. That path can bring Mashiach early. We have groups of prophecies. We have many prophecies in the Tanakh. But they all boil down to one of two paths: the path of Torah, the path of consciousness, the path of choosing the correct way, or the path of chaos, the path of pain, leading to the Armageddon War, God forbid. And we learn from this reality of these two paths is that any negative prophecy does not have to happen. So we've all grown up in the Western world. We've all been exposed to this prophecy of the Armageddon War. And the more people speak about it, because words have power, the harder it is to avoid it. And that is why the wisdom of Kabbalah has been revealed in our generation, so that we can avoid it. Because built into the teachings of the Kabbalah is Hashem's mercy, how to avoid chaos, how to avoid pain and suffering and loss. That's what we will be teaching you. That is why you are in this world, to remove bread of shame by choice, not by pain and suffering. That's what we're here to do. Does anybody have any questions? Remember to unmute your phone by pressing *6. So I have two classes a day, Sunday through Thursday. I don't teach on Friday, but I have two classes, Motzi Shabbat. And then we begin a new week on Sunday. All of those classes are available to you. They're put on the website in a web page called Recordings. Feel free to listen to them. You're more than welcome. There are no charges for any of the classes. You're welcome to hear them on the conference call anytime. Hear them directly or hear them on the recording. There are no charge. I do ask you to consider making a donation, because there's a spiritual reason of exchanging energy for energy that we will go into in one of the later classes. I hope you enjoyed today's class, and I hope to see you next Sunday at 2 o'clock West Coast time, where we will begin to give you tools. And the first tool we will give you is, why did God create Hebrew letters? And what are Hebrew letters? Does anybody have any questions? Shalom to everyone. I hope you have a beautiful week. Have a good day.